This is the moment many wait for.
The most entertaining.
A man of wisdom. A man of experience, Dave.
The most informative.
To bring light to a dark subject. To bring positivity to a negative world.
The incredible Paul Moyer.
The incredible Paul Moyer. How about that?
Playing some 90s rock there a little bit.
He's all. We look forward to it every week. He is here, everybody. You can all relax. All is right with the world. He's with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is Paul Moyer. How are you, man?
I am doing well. Thank you for having me, as always.
Always good to have you, Paul. And before we get into, you know, quarterback talk and all that, what was your takeaway from the weekend of football? There was a lot of hand-wringing about officiating and, you know, different things like that. Anything stand out to you as, wow, I can't believe they allowed that to happen, or they made this call or didn't make this call? Anything stand out?
Well, the first game, not much. The first one that popped up is, you know, they're going to change the rule next year when Purdy gets hit in the arm. And, you know, we're pretty much, you can't hit him now below the thighs. You can't hit him from the shoulder up. They really need to put just a bullseye on a quarterback and say, that's where you're allowed to hit them, and that's it. You know, it was unfortunate that San Francisco's quarterbacks went down, but that is what it is. I think that the Cincinnati-Kansas City game, man, it's just so disappointing for it to end that way. And I don't think the refs could have done anything different on that. I mean, it's that push, the extension of the arms is what ultimately did it. I think if he didn't, you know, extend his hands out like what Daryl Jackson did in 2005 in the Super Bowl, they probably wouldn't have called it, but that was disappointing. But I thought the four best teams were in the final four, and whichever ones came out of it, I was actually surprised. I thought San Francisco would obviously play better, and I really thought Cincinnati was the better team. I really did. I just tough to win on the road.
Hey, Paul, you know, a lot of people have said this because, first of all, the 2 weeks before the Super Bowl, something catches fire, right? I mean, there's always something with the deer antler spray with Ray Lewis, and then, you know, everybody drumming up his past. I mean, there's always something that goes on, and it seems like the sort of hot topic, sticky topic is the officiating, and that how can that get better? Do you, you know, because, and I've had people say this, any talk of officials, you know, doing things year round is ridiculous. I'm like, why can't they work on that? Am I off on that, or how do you feel about? I mean, I feel like they could always train more, look at more film, get in better shape. You know, maybe find a way so that they can, you know, understand how difficult it is when you tackle somebody that you are going to fall on top of them. I mean, I feel like that can always get better.
Yeah, I think it's a tough one, Dave, because I mean, year round, what does that mean? You know, we do a lot of things to improve ourselves, you know, that are after hours, or, you know, from education to working out, things like that. But I mean, how do you get practice and game stuff during the off season, you know, unless, you know, you go to every practice and every OTA, and I guess they could do that with some of the guys, maybe watch more film. Yeah. I think there's just got to be a better way of just testing these guys, you know, whether it's how they actually can process things that are moving that fast. I'm sure they have it. Getting younger people in better shape. I think there should be some criteria to that as well. But I really don't know, Dave. I think they have so many guys in there and women who are CPAs and lawyers because they've got to know that thick, gigantic Bible rule book that keeps getting bigger and bigger. You know, to me, it's grab these former players, you know, start training them right from the get-go. Which they're trying to do more and more, I think it'll get better over time. But if that game's that fast, you better have guys that know how to react that fast too, you know, as far as referees. I also think, Dave, I think for as fast as the game is and how many rules there are, they're 98% really good.
No, I agree.
It's just, boy, yeah, those 2% that it jumps out at the right time, it's tough. But I don't think you need year-round coaches. That's just my opinion. But I do think you need to have certain criterias, and if they need to work extra on weekends and all that stuff, they're making an extra couple $100,000 a year if they have another job. So they certainly should be able to put some time in on the weekends and after hours to improve their craft.
Yeah, they're highly paid. They're paid well. It used to be, well, these guys have to work during the offseason because they're not paid that well. And these are six-figure salaries for these officials. So, you know, maybe they could make it more. Yeah, listen, the one thing the NFL has, Paul, is boatloads of money. There's no shortage on cash. This is the golden goose, and the goose gets fatter every year. Everything they do generates revenue, and it wins. And it's weird that this is sort of the one consistent thing that if people pointed to and said, ah, they don't do this well or they don't do that well, that's a very short list. This would be we had Mark Schlereth on yesterday and asked him the same question we just asked you about the officials. Hey, did anything stand out? Did it seem worse than it normally was? And he said, well, let me ask you this. When has officiating ever been good? That's a guy that's got multiple Super Bowl rings, and he was in the league for a long time. And that's his opinion of the officiating, that it's always been bad. And I don't think he's unique. So it's just weird that that's been such a consistent complaint problem with a league that has the wherewithal to really make a dent in it if they wanted to, whether that is having guys, you know, train during the off season, it's a year round thing, or the eye in the sky camera, or more cameras, or something to sort of alleviate what seems to be a chronic complaint.
Yeah. Or technology. Yeah. If the complaint is, you don't want to slow the game down too much, but you know, if the complaint is why they're missing on some calls and they're egregious, right? I mean, that's what you're looking at. Oh, that call was so bad. Then technology should be able to help correct that in a you know, timely manner. I think Major League Baseball events, we know we're going to see it in minor leagues where they're going to have, you know, the, you know, robo calls now. I don't know what they call it, but they're going to take that out of the umpire's hands. And it probably rightfully so, that's so fast, right? That would be tough. And I think the same thing in the NFL. There's just some things that you can keep expanding on to get it right. And if it's an egregious call, why can't we get that fixed? Because I really do. I'll disagree with Mark on that. I think the refs are pretty darn good, you know, what they do. I mean, there's so much going on so fast. You know, just go watch them. Just don't even watch the game. Just go watch a ref and what they have to do to spot the ball, you know, to make sure the time's right. You know, okay, was there an actual flag on that? I mean, they get it right. I mean, again, more often than not. So if the critical calls, egregious call, let's find a way to at least help them on that and make them better at what they do.
Yeah, and I think probably what I would complain about the most is not the officials themselves. I like the officials. I always thought they were there to help me and all that. I've said this a million times, but it's what's coming down from the league, you know, what they're asking them to do. So, yeah, but I think that's the one thing that's caught fire that, you know, if you ask me, looking at the headlines in between now and the Super Bowl, there's always something that bubbles up and becomes a hot topic. But I don't know if you heard my update there, Paul. I was talking about the Pro Bowl. Maybe that's one thing that the NFL can't get right, Paul. Maybe that's the one. I mean, they do the draft is great. The free agency period is always good, but I'm not so sure about this one. What do you think?
Well, here's the beauty about it, Dave, is it's this weekend, and if we don't want to watch, we really don't have to. I thought they were kind of funny, some of the things they're doing. That will make me watch just for the heck of it. You know, I mean, tic-tac-toe, I mean, there's a way to do that, by the way, and never lose.
No, that's it's called, you know, kick-tac-toe.
Kick-tac-toe. Yeah. Okay, yeah, so they got to actually get it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, so there's some interesting things there. And it was flag football anyways. Now they've just made it officially flag football,
right?
Which I think is fine also. You know, I was thinking about the refs again. One more thing on that. And the reason why I don't think they're that bad, I think the people who make these subjective calls, like pass interference, I think they're bad a lot because they don't really understand what that is. I think I could do a better job doing that. But I'll tell you what, I'm not sure, and this is why I think they do a pretty good job, I could do better as a ref. You know, and I've watched them on so many things. And so, you know, unless you really think you could be better at it, you know, it's a pretty tough job. So now transitioning back to the Pro Bowl, you know, it's entertainment. Just find a way. I don't need to see a game. I just want to see the guys, the stars, and them compete at something. I'd love that they throw in a bunch of different sports out there. Shoot, Dave Craig would have loved that back then, and Dave, because he liked to do everything, like all those games. So I actually kind of, for the first time in about 5 years, I'll probably watch some of it.
Well, Paul, you went to the Goofy Games 1 year, right?
A couple years, yeah.
Yeah, with Disney. Yeah, I went 1 year with Rabel, and yeah, it's kind of sounds like that. They have all these different events. But, you know, I think the good thing that will come out of it is that, you know, these NFL players, they've got their helmets on. I mean, hey, look, there's a lot more media and internet and all that when we played. And I don't know about you, Paul, but I could walk out of the kingdom and no one would know who I was. I'm sure Paul Moyer was getting, you know, flocked with autograph seekers and
no, people would say, hey, Dave, no. Come here. And I would sign Dave Wyman. And you would sign Paul Moyer. Come on, we've been called the other person for over 30 years now.
Yeah, they would say, oh, you're Paul Moyer. And I'm like, nope. And that's it.
Nope. Yeah. it's a different time. But, Dave, we would go out. I mean, there was a lot of people who knew who we were and wanted autographs and, you know, come up to you during dinner and things like that. It's not probably to the extent today because of social media and, you know, guys have a you don't have to be a starter in the NFL to have a social presence and people know who you are. Right. So that part is and you're following, you know, all of these guys have, you know, 20, 40, 50, 100,000 people following them on Twitter accounts. So that part is absolutely different, but you know, we were a pretty big deal back in the day, and I liked it. I didn't bother me at all. I thought it was an honor.
You're still a big deal.
It's an honor, man. If somebody asked me for my autograph, I've always said, think about that for a minute. Somebody thinks so much of you that they want your autograph. I always thought it was an honor.
Yeah. See, now I feel like I should have shook the guy's hand in the urinal. It's just, now I feel bad.
No, we don't do that, though.
You hear that story, Paul?
We can nod. Nope.
Yeah, Bob's at the urinal. Guy wants to shake his hand. Bob says no, and the guy goes, oh, that's right. You got that germ thing. No.
Well, that's part of it.
It's a lot more than that.
We've got bigger problems in this exchange here.
Yeah. Oh, Lord God. Yeah, I'm not even elbow bumping at that point.
Hey, yeah. We were talking about the hypothetical that, let's just say Gino, he moves on elsewhere. He signs elsewhere. He makes his money, whatever. So it's sort of just testing your belief in Pete and this coaching staff's ability to turn a quarterback you might not otherwise be excited about into a good quarterback the way they did with Gino this year. So we went through this list of names, and I'm just trying to say there was one guy that where I just went, all right, even if Pete and John are singing from the mountaintops what a great pickup this guy is, I'm just not buying in. Everybody else, I'm like, okay, I can do it. So hypothetically, they bring in Derek Carr. Mm-hmm. Are you on board?
Sure.
Jimmy Garoppolo.
Not so much.
Can't throw outside the numbers, Paul.
That, and he's injury prone, and there's just, he's been on too many great teams, and he hasn't been able to win one. So okay. I just don't see it.
Okay. Taylor Heinicke.
I'll pass.
Yeah. So you wouldn't believe if Pete and John are going, we've always loved him. We love his grit. He's a gamer. He's going to fit right in. You'd be going, no, this is a bad idea.
Well, I mean, it's just, no. I'm just going, I'll take Drew Lock. There's more upside. I'm kind of looking at some of those things that are they better than the two guys we have? I get it, we lose Gino, but maybe we get keep Lock. So I'm kind of using Lock as my baseline.
Andy Dalton.
No.
Okay. What is it about Andy Dalton? Paul, were you there that time? We're getting ready to play Cincy, and the guy from Cincinnati who was like on their .com page, I didn't rip Andy Dalton, but I sort of was like, yeah, I'm not so sure. And he was like, this is a stand-up guy. He's the greatest. I mean, he just pummeled me with all this positive stuff. I don't know.
It's like me and Sam Bradford.
I just, the last guy I can remember that had red hair that won a Super Bowl was like Sonny Six, or was Kilmer from the Redskins or something way back when. So Billy, I don't know. Kilmer. Maybe it's just the hair.
Yeah. Okay.
I got nothing to go off.
You also don't like the Raiders owner either, then. And that's a really stupid haircut.
That's the worst. That's awful. Right. All right. Two more here. Two more. And this is where it pushed the limits for me. Sam Darnold.
God, that's a tough one. As an SC guy, wrong thing. I'm trying to find some mobility is one reason why. And I don't know how mobile he is. So I'm going to say no on him as well.
And then the last one, this is the one where I said, I don't care what Pete says, how much he loves him, I'm just not in. Jameis Winston.
No. I don't see, unless they saw something on film where they said, wow, he has been coached so horribly, and he had Sean Payton at one time, the amount of turnovers he has does not, it just doesn't. I just can't see Pete bringing over a guy who turns the ball over 30 times in 1 year.
Yeah, but he had LASIK surgery.
Yeah, that's what we kept hearing. Yeah. Is, oh, you guys are too hard on him. He had vision problems. He's got LASIK. Wait till you see what he does. Well, he looked like he had a really clear picture of that clipboard because he didn't play after LASIK. So, yeah, I'm not a Winston guy. I'm not a Jameis guy.
I think it's less about the LASIK part, more about being colorblind and throwing to the wrong jersey color, right? I mean, so I don't know if there's – Brock Heward knows he's colorblind, so he could probably help out in that conversation. Would he grab a guy who was colorblind? No, I'm teasing.
Yeah. Is that – does Brock really – like he can't tell the difference? Is it just like blues and greens, or is it all colors?
No, I think there's certain colors he doesn't see.
Yeah, I think certain colors.
Brock sees in black and white.
Yeah.
No, he's not, I don't think he's quite to that extent, but you know, it's definitely, he would be on TV and I would be texting him saying that tie doesn't go with that shirt and suit.
Oh. Really,
you're not aware, but
wife,
it's not a good match.
Done well. Yeah. No, you got that navy and black, not such a perfect mix there, but no, I'm teasing.
Yeah. Hey, we went to the Mariners media day yesterday, Paul, just to get us even more amped up for the season. And, you know, Jerry's out there talking in service, and, you know, they had Teoscar Hernandez and Cal Raleigh, and it just we had Colton Wong on the show, and he was, I don't know if he had a chance to hear it. He comes off very well. He's a very nice guy who's very excited about kind of bouncing back at a rough year last year. Did you get a chance to hear any of these guys on the, you know, I know the midday show had Cal and Teoscar on their show as well, and we had Jerry and Scott Service the past couple of days, just to build your anticipation and excitement for the season and get your text chain going that doesn't include Dave Wyman. It's all bubbling right now.
Yeah, I read obviously like Service and him saying it's the deepest team he's ever had and things like that, but I didn't actually hear any of the clips at this point. But it sounds like they're pretty excited about this year coming up. Would you agree?
Yeah,
they're very excited. Yeah, it was really cool, and we got a chance to sit with Cal Raleigh, and he is like as advertised. I think, you know, you see how he is behind the plate, and he's just very calm. What a good dude, and just very very calm presence and everything. So yeah, it's going to be, they're really excited, and you know what, Paul, I was telling Bob this. Bob stood tall in the pocket because he was complaining the entire offseason about, why haven't they gotten this deal? Why not Trey Turner? Where's this guy? Yeah, and they were looking at Bob like, yeah, pal, like we're not going to spend that kind of money. The owner, everybody. And Bob took it like a champ, man.
Yeah. John Stanton was making fun of the food I had on the table. He said, well, that's why we couldn't pay for any players. You're eating all the food.
Was it good food, though? I just want to know, was it good? Okay, because
it's pretty solid. Pretty solid fare out there. Yeah, yeah. No, but they've heard it.
Well, yes. Well, good. They're listening then, which is even better. You guys have heard me, man. I think we're a better team this year, you know, and I think, you know, with the young guys, you know, just having the opportunity for them to take a step. I don't even think it needs to be a leap, just to continue to get better. We're better. We got some guys coming back who were injured last year, too. I think Murphy is, you know, we forgot how important he was because we didn't have a backup catcher last year. Yeah. And it was a big drop off. And I was looking, somebody had posted the stats for, I think it was Raleigh had 166 games and Murphy 186 or vice versa. And they were just showing the comparison. And, you know, Murphy has more home runs. He has a higher average. His walk ratio is a little higher. He's a pretty good hitter. Yeah. And, you know, and definitely he's a good catcher. I don't think anybody's as good a catcher as Raleigh is because he's shown to be he's one of the best ones out there. So, again, I'm excited. I'm hoping we add down the road, but I think going into the season, we got all we need to make a run at this thing.
Paul, really quick, have you ever coached a guy that was like Jared Kelnick? And we're kind of just based on what we see. He just seems like he's super intense, and you were a good coach, and you know, obviously with the Seahawks and then high school and everything. What would you do with a guy like that, just in general? With, you know, it seems like you got to save him from himself a little bit. He's a little bit too intense, maybe.
Yeah, I think the thing that's difficult with him is now where he is. When he first came in, you know, you're trying to manage a bit of that expectation and, you know, look, trust the process, not the results type of thing. Because with young guys, you just don't know. You're really trying to teach them how to become a professional and how to make that leap. The ton of pressure on them. And then for him to go down, then up, and then back down, and then have an opportunity to go through the playoffs. I think this year, I would have had a lot of conversations with him just in this off season on, hey, when you come back, we are putting you in that left field spot. Here's what my expectations are of you. You know, what you do in the off season, all of those things. I think he's going to be a different person than he was the last 2 years, just mentally. He's not the guy anymore, right? That the pressure's off of him, other than to have a career. But I mean, the pressure to be that superstar, I think he's in a perfect position. If he's going to make the leap, this is the year for it. And, you know, I would just keep pumping him up on, look, here's your strengths, but more important, you better know your weaknesses and work on those. And you avoid those at all costs. You focus on those strengths. And, I can't wait. He's my one sleeper. I think he's the guy that's going to take us to the next level. Maybe that's the wrong word. He's my tipping point guy. If we can get something out of him, this has a chance to be a really special team.
Yeah, he could solve a lot of my issues if he became a really good hitter this year. Then I would feel much better about what they didn't do in the offseason, Paul. Hey, as always, we appreciate it. Great stuff from you. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
I look forward to it. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul.
There he is. Paul Moyer with us every single week. We had somebody text in that said something about, hey, I agree completely with this guy. And I said, it's Paul Moyer. And they wrote back like, he's very, very smart. Very smart guy.
Because he agrees with that guy.
I guess.
Yeah.
It's like that guy, Paul. He's with us every single week. So there you go. All right. There are two important things we learned about quarterbacks last year. We'll talk about what it means for the Seahawks offseason coming up with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Our thanks to Paul Moyer, who joined us in the previous segment. Paul with us every single week. If you're new to the program, he's with us every week. You never want to miss that. John Morosi is with us every week as well, talking baseball and some hockey as well. He's our MLB and NHL insider. He'll be with us at 5 o'clock today, so stay tuned for that. Always very entertaining with him. By the way, before we move on to the other topics, Paul had a lot of no's on that quarterback list.
Yeah.
In terms of belief. See, I think he was leaning more on the individuals as to the belief that Pete can turn those individuals into somebody productive.
Yeah.
It was more of a test of how much do you believe in Pete as opposed to how much do you believe in Andy Dalton.
Yeah, and I think he was probably answering those the other way around.
Yeah.
I think, though, that maybe he could have also been saying no, meaning Pete's not going to come to me and say, this guy's the savior and, you know, he's going to be the guy that takes us there. He's not going to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting test because there are a lot of people that are, hey, and Pete and John, we trust. And if this is what they're on board with, then I'm on board too. But you see, there's a limit. There's a line there where you're going, I was with you up until you said this, or I was with you until you signed that guy. And yeah, Jameis would be my cutoff point right there.
Well, I mean,
could even get on board with Sam Darnold, Dave.
Yeah. Well, look, I think we figured that out this year. And I think just in the NFL in general, I think the coaching has really come together. I mean, I can't even tell you the name of the D coordinator in Philly, but I know that Sirianni, the head coach, was defending him because
that's right. Yeah.
You know, and he did such a good job with that defense. And, you know, they're one of the top defenses in the league. You see that, of course, what happened with Geno. I think that there are certain coaches. What didn't happen in Denver?
Yeah, yeah. And it wasn't just Russell. I mean, we were following Denver fairly closely for a team that you really got no involvement in past the draft pick in the first game of the season. We were hearing about clock management issues and the offense. He kept Murray's, he's relinquishing his duties. And all right, now this guy's going to call the offense and this guy's going to do it. Just seemed like they were just off kilter all season long as a franchise, not just Russell, but He's the face. He's the guy making the money, but they had a lot of issues there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it was him. I mean, he just wasn't himself. I mean, there was lots of times where I'm watching games and, you know, like Troy Aikman and, you know, Tony Romo, and they're like, why is he making that throw and why is he running it there? And yeah, there was lots of complaints about the way he played. So, you know, but anyway, that's just part of, you know, the whole quarterback evaluation that we've been talking about. And so, you know, I think Paul was probably going, I don't think Pete and John are going to come to me and say, Sam Darnold's the guy. He's like, I think he was probably answering the question more that way.
Well, but it comes back to what we're going to talk about here in the coach being the most important aspect of this. You could have a guy that's got, you know, all the talent in the world. He's got a cannon arm. He's 6'4". He's, you know, whatever attribute you'd want in a quarterback, they've got. But it's not been refined. Drew Locke, he's probably a perfect example of that. He's very tall, by all accounts, has this ridiculous arm and can do all these things. But he's looked at as, is it that he hasn't been, you know, Schlereth told us, they didn't have time for him up there in Denver. And you're like, okay, so if he gets in the right situation, are we looking at him as Geno 2.0, where here's a guy who was viewed as something other than a starter or something other than an elite quarterback, and they can take him and transform him into that as well because he's getting the proper amount of attention and the proper coaching? And, you know, we were talking about in relation to Russell, is that going to be the cure-all to have Sean Payton out there now? Now a coach he reveres, a coach that has a resume of success, a coach that he looks up to, is that going to be the difference? And here's what Stink said about that.
To have the guy coaching that, you know, has coached Drew Brees and kind of put Drew Brees on the map. Remember, that was a reclamation project when he got to the Saints. Chargers let him go. He had the shoulder injury. The Miami Dolphins wanted him, and they decided not to pass him on his physical. Well, you know, I mean, he got the best out of Drew Brees, who was a guy that the Chargers said, no, we'd rather have Phillip Rivers, and Drew Brees was a second rounder, but, you know, who's coming off that shoulder injury. And then, you know, he got Teddy Bridgewater in a 5-game or 6-game, you know, stint to play probably the best football he has ever played and got him a big contract. And so Sean has done this with multiple quarterbacks. There's no question that he can really coach, and there's no question that he'll, you know, get the best out of Russell in my mind, and he'll be in charge. I mean, he's not going to, you know, he won't be deferring to Russell. Russell will be deferring to Sean.
Yep, there we go. I feel like there's some faith there. It should work, and it better, because they sure mortgaged their future there with trading away, you know, first round picks.
Yeah, yeah, to bring in the coach and then trading away here to get Russell. I mean, yeah. So they've traded away a lot to get this combination there, but it speaks to what we were talking about, that maybe we don't give enough credit or acknowledge the impact of the coaching that these guys receive. We can look at, again, all the intangibles and say, dude's got the laser arm, the cannon arm, and he's this big and he's elusive and fast. But if you're not in the right system or you don't have the right coach, how many of those guys are going to really shine?
Yeah, it looked like, for Russell, just looked like it didn't make sense to him, whatever they were doing there. So, yeah, I think that really came into focus that, you know, just from our standpoint, especially because, you know, like Mark said, I thought there was probably a lot of times that Sean Payton will do this too, but I think there was a lot of times where Pete Carroll would have saved Russ from himself. You know, he liked to throw the ball deep, and he, you know, would like to take chances. It's got to be, you know, and I've said this about Russell for a long time, that it's got to be kind of the biggest challenge for him is discretion, because he can make plays with his legs, and mm-hmm. he's always made, you know, great deep throws, and, you know, but there's sometimes where, and I thought one of the best examples of coaching, especially when it comes to a quarterback, was at the end of the Giant game when Geno, I did a football one-on-one on this, but he's rolling out, they're trying to kill the clock and just get off the field and get the win. You know, I think it was a 13-point win anyway, but he had a chance to throw to DK Metcalf, who was wide open and waving his arms 15 yards down the field. And he's like, I'm going to tuck it, and I'm going to run for the first down, and I'm going to get down and keep the clock going. And that's exactly what he did. And, you know, that's about coaching. I mean, like every quarterback, I feel like in the NFL for the most part would go, he's wide open. That's our best receiver. I'm going to throw it.
Yeah.
You know, and he was like, nope, I'm going to, you know. So I thought that was a good example right there of Pete, you know, not so much, again, not so much about the mechanics and things like that, but more about, like, discretion, the plays, the decisions that you should make, whether it's to run, throw it away, take a sack, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and I look at the coaches, the mechanics, I assume, come from the quarterback's coach.
Right.
They'll worry about that. The head coach is the one that's got to instill the confidence in you and let them know, hey, we believe in you. You can do this. You wouldn't be on this roster if we didn't think you could do this, and just build them up. And you probably had to do that even more so with somebody like Geno, who hadn't been given the opportunity in years and years. And right. He's the right guy to do that, to send that message. So that's what gives me the, I guess, the level of faith that he could do it with somebody else as well. If Geno moves on, whoever they settle on, whether it's Drew, whether it's some of the names we threw out, Derek Carr, whoever, I believe in Pete's ability to get them believing in themselves, if that's a problem, or get them believing in his way, in being more caught, making the right choices at the right time. So it's more about Pete, and I think coaching is huge when it comes to the success of these guys. History is about to be made in one particular sport, but how much would you pay to see it? We'll talk about it next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
How much would you pay to see history, Dave? Are you a guy that's I guess it, for me, it would depend on what the history is. What record is about to fall? You know, how big is it in that particular sport that I love that I need to be there to say, I was there when it was broken? Because we've talked about this. We get a little jaded, a little numb to going to sporting events because it's what we've, I mean, you've played in them. I've been going to them for a few decades now and as part of my job. So you kind of lose that enthusiasm for sitting out in the stands for any particular thing at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, the couch always seems to be option A for me. It always seems to be more pleasant. I can use my own bathroom. I've got food there that's not $20 for a sandwich. It's I don't have to pay to park anywhere. It's great.
It's kind of fun when we go to, you know, the 710 night when we have all the people in there, and that's a good one.
Even then, we're up in the suite. And
yeah, you're in the suite, so it's pretty nice.
We're a bunch of high rollers out there. But it's, you know, assuming it's hard to remove yourself from that, but I sent you guys this last night, and the Lakers, who haven't been great this year by all accounts, but they do have LeBron James, and he is nearing the scoring record held by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And I think he's what, 89 points away is what it is.
Yep.
So they've got games coming up, sort of trying to anticipate where he might break the record. You got February 7th against the Thunder. The lowest price ticket available right now is $326. The average price is $1,152. And then they show an increase from the season opener price, 390%. And then the game on the 9th against the Bucks, lowest price ticket, $357. The average, $1,302. Mm-hmm. So just looking at that, go, my goodness, would you pay $1,300 to say I was there when LeBron broke the scoring record? Now, you obviously need to love the NBA. And
good gosh, no. Good gosh, no. Well, first of all, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is one of my favorite athletes of all time.
Yeah.
Mainly because of his performance on Jeopardy. He was just brilliant. Really good. Really good. But, yeah, well, and first of all, the other thing is, okay, so LeBron James is averaging 30 points a game, right?
In his 20th season.
So you're trying to figure out it's basically 90 points. So you're going for that third game, and I'm not sure what the date would be there. But
Tuesday. That's what
on Tuesday.
The prices start to go up.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't want to do the radio math on that, Mike. 30 points a game and 90, that's pretty easy, though. So, but yeah, I don't think so. Especially for something like that. I mean, I think if it was your team that you've been following for a really long time and you're invested and you love these guys, you know, like.
Or he's your favorite player. Maybe you want to be there and say he's always been my favorite player and I was there the night he broke the record that's been held since 1984.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know. Well, 1984, is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
38,387 points. He's held the record since 1984. James wasn't even born when Abdul-Jabbar first broke the record.
12-30-84 is his. He was born on the 30th in 1984 of December. So, yeah.
Goodness.
Not that, but I think if it was a team that I was just, I loved everybody, and I don't think for an individual, though, that I wouldn't do that, but I would do it for a team effort. You know, and like for a lot of the fans here, I mean, I'll bet you a lot of people felt that way about going to the games, the game that was here.
Mm-hmm.
It was only one, right?
Yeah.
If I recall, yeah. That was the smoke game, and it was 18 innings. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of people would have, and I'm curious, do we ever get like a price? Because apparently there was 250,000 people at that game.
Yeah, everybody went. The entire state of Washington was there.
Right.
I don't know what the... I mean, a lot of this is about what it is on the secondary market and people selling their season tickets and making a mint. It used to be that way when it was the Seahawks and the 49ers. I've got a buddy who's got season tickets. Mm-hmm. And at the peak of that rivalry, when both teams are good, and we've talked about it a million times, Harbaugh and Kaepernick and Crabtree and Vernon Davis and Patrick Will, all those guys. When it was that, he would talk about he could sell his tickets, and they were decent seats. They're not great. They're not 50-yard line or anything. They were sort of towards one end. But he's saying, I can sell these just the game, this particular game, and it covers the cost of my entire season.
Yeah.
And some.
Right.
I mean, that's sort of the mania that was attached to that rivalry. And, you know, this is for a lot of basketball fans, if you're an NBA fan and a LeBron fan or a Laker fan, whatever, maybe you feel the same way. Like, man, I need to be there. I want to be able to say I was there the day that record fell.
You know, I have to say I'm kind of a snob because, you know, if you're in the suite with those nice, big, comfortable chairs and there's food right there, there's a bathroom in there. I mean, there's, you know, when we broadcast up there, the Seahawk games in that media box where we all are, all the TV is, everybody, there's one bathroom.
Yeah.
And it's one door that shuts. So I went on
one
a
stall
search.
You're talking about?
Yeah. I went on a search. I ended up down on like the
there's
second
one door
level.
That shuts.
Yeah. There's a second level where I went down there and had to go down there with the unwashed masses.
Yeah. You know? Nobody went.
That was,
there.
Yeah, it was terrible. And, you know, you get exactly what you want. The food at the stadium is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, that part. But I don't know, man.
One door that shuts.
Yeah, that's it, man.
So you basically, you wouldn't pay to go to any sporting event because you want easy access to a bathroom. So
well,
if it came with easy access
well,
to a bathroom,
he could pay for a
shell
suite.
Out untold money.
He could pay for a suite, or he could
buy the suite. I'm wondering that would be a ridiculous price, but
yeah, I don't even know what that would cost.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm making the case for what you said. Like, your bathroom is right there.
Yeah,
you know that nobody is going to have peed all over the seat or anything like that, and everybody washes their hands at your house.
Yes,
Bob.
They do.
What if it was a historic event, though? I mean, this is going to be history. I mean, I'd be curious to know, what did people pay for the first Seahawks Super Bowl? Like, when they finally reached the Super Bowl, I'm sure people shelled out everything. Yeah, but I mean, it's a moment, right? You want to get there.
Of course,
there.
Yeah.
Whenever the Titans get to the Super Bowl, I might be dead, but I might pay whatever it takes to get there.
We'll take your ashes there, Mike. Well, it won't be me, that's for sure.
Well, so I bet in 2006. I'd be very curious.
We'll make sure we have a recording of him going, yeah, they'll probably lose anyway. They'll find a lose. They'll find a way to lose.
Lefko from his grave.
From his grave going, I told you
they were going to lose. Oh, yeah.
That's like their, sorry to interrupt again here, but there's a famous like obituary now about a Cleveland Browns fan, and he said he wanted his pallbearers to be wearing Browns jerseys so his team could let him down for the last time.
Oh. That's pretty good. Yeah. That's a good sense of humor right there.
That's good stuff. Yeah. Well, look, I mean, the other thing you could do if you had tickets to something like that, you could sell it like you talked about and buy something that's meaningful and then, you know, watch it at home.
Or yeah, but the idea that that game, I thought that was, and he sold him, by the way. He sold him. He's like, I can watch this. Yeah, it'd be fun to be there, but I can pay for my entire season with the sale of this one game and watch it on TV.
How much was it again? Did you say?
Or
did
I can't remember what he had.
Whatever it was, it paid for his tickets.
Yeah, it paid for his season, the total cost of his season tickets, and some. He made money on top of it by selling one game.
And there's lots of people that, like, they don't go on vacation. They don't take, you know, fancy trips or anything. It's like, we put our money into this team.
Yeah.
That's where we're going to go.
That's where they find their entertainment and their joy and all that. So, hey, but I'll be interested to see. You know there'll be stories once that record is broken about somebody who paid. I paid $12,000 to sit, you know, 20 rows up or something like that, or courtside could be $25,000 or some crazy amount of money being made out there. All right, coming up, we learned a little more about the Mariners' second base situation yesterday. We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710.